Welcome to The Point. I'm Mindy Todd. WCAA will continue to keep you up to date on the latest news and will be devoting future Point programs to discuss how the coronavirus is impacting the lives of people in the Cape Islands and South Coast. But we also recognize that taking a break from the news, especially in times like these, is important. So today, our topic is houseplants. And joining us from her home is Marcia Potash, a lifelong gardener who's been working at greenhouses and nurseries for more than 30 years, the last 20 of which have been with indoor and tropical plants. Marcia, welcome back.
Thank you. I'm delighted to be back.
Yeah. And now, last time you were here, we talked about the growing popularity of houseplants. And for folks who missed that, talk a little bit about that. We're seeing a big interest in houseplants now.
Yes, we are, especially amongst the younger people, the millennial crowd. And that is just wonderful for the industry. It's pumping a lot of new blood. And, yes, the popularity, I believe it's because a lot of young people just want to bring nature into their home. They're not ready to start families, and they have the time to devote to plants.
And we should mention, research suggests that interaction with indoor plants may reduce psychological stress. Studies have shown that being around plants may also help with concentration and memory. So in a way, plants are good for you.
Yes, definitely. I think they have a very calming effect. I know a lot of people at the greenhouse where I work just come for a stroll through just to relax, enjoy the sunshine, especially during these winter months, mm-hmm. and especially during this time, which is just unprecedented. People are just turning to the green world.
Yeah.
Also, it's a great time to get outside. As the list of things we cannot do continues to grow, to look for things that we can do at home or in our yard are just becoming essential. For our, for our mental well-being.
Right. If you have questions this morning about your houseplants, give us a call, 866-999-4626. That's 866-999-4626. Or you can send us an email, thepoint@capeandislands.org. We have most children home from school. So what are your ideas about maybe using indoor plants as teaching tools? Are there projects or experiments that kids and parents can do with plants at home?
One that comes to mind is kids love to experiment, and they love having their own plant to care for. Many times I've assisted young people that are doing a school project and are looking for two of the same plant, one that they might treat differently than the other, and see how they react. Some of the simple things that might be a fun thing to do is to see how take two different plants, put them in a closet where it's very dark, and not water them, and see which one survives the longest. That might be a fun project with the kids that like to experiment. Also, just starting plants from maybe mom or grandma has a spider plant, and detaching some of those baby spider plants to grow off of a spider plant and starting their own plant. That also might be a fun thing to do.
Yeah.
Also, seed starting.
I was going to say seeds. And what are some
of the garden center to start their seeds?
Yeah. What are some easy ones, some easy seeds that kids could have some success
okay,
with?
Okay. Something you might have on hand at home. Popcorn, chia seeds, if you have a package of chia seeds, beans, pinto beans, garbanzo beans, lentils, and separating them and growing all the same seeds in one pot and just do an experiment which ones germinate first, which ones grow taller. You could even use, if you have like a package of bird seed on hand, maybe using some seed from that. That would be a very simple one.
Yeah, that sounds easy.
Yeah.
Now, there are people who claim that if you talk to your plants, they do better.
Well,
that would be a good experiment, right? Take two plants, one of them you're really sweet and nice to and talk to, and the other one you ignore. And with the two plants you talked about putting in the closet, you could try that experiment with two plants and, be really sweet and nice to one and ignore the other and see what happens.
Yeah, I just read an experiment that they did with school children where they had two of the same plant. One they did they compliment. They made tapes that they replayed, and one was all complimentary, loving words, and the other one was bullying words. And they didn't use voice intonation. It was just...
just the words.
Just one they bullied, wow. And one they complimented, and the one that bullied, you know, just did not thrive as well. But anyway, that's that was just kind of a fun project.
Huh, interesting.
I don't know how scientific it is, but kids love things like that.
Yeah.
Also, too, maybe just starting a terrarium.
Oh, yeah.
Even use you could use seeds from home if you don't want to get out. The garden center that I work at is open and doing kind of a lively business. I'm taking some time off myself because mm-hmm. I'm in a high risk.
Right.
But I hear that people are coming in and, you know, anxious to get started with their spring projects, which is, you know, being very optimistic.
Yeah. Now, even if you don't have kids at home, there's some maintenance items on your indoor plants that we could be doing, you know, like repotting or trimming back. So what are some of the things? How do you know when you have a plant that needs to be repotted?
Usually it dries out very quickly. Also, you have a lot of roots at the surface or the bottom, or you're finding yourself having to water it more frequently than what is generally suggested. Plants, their roots grow on the outside of the pot first and surround the outside. Eventually, those roots need room, and they're going to fill in the center. And when that center gets filled in and you water, it's like pouring water through a sieve. The water goes through very quickly. And that's the time that you probably also, too, proportionally, if the plant looks just really big, but plants can get pretty big and in a small pot and do quite well. Most tropical houseplants do not mind being, you know, underpotted or in a small pot and do quite well for a while. But if it gets to the point where the plant's not standing up on its own, it's time to repot.
Yeah. And some plants like to be snug like that, right?
Oh, yes.
Yeah. What are some of the ones that kind of like a snug
pot? Oh, the one that comes to mind is peace lily. In fact, overpot that, it tends to go into a decline. That is one plant that's very adverse to being in too big a pot. Also, too, a lot of the succulents, especially jade, people have to remember that jade and cactus, their root systems grow very slowly, and it takes a long time for them to fill out a new space. So the rule of thumb has always been no more than 1 or 2 inches. Say, if it's in a 4-inch pot, you could pop it up to a 5 or 6-inch pot, but no more than a 6-inch pot. And plants grow strongest and healthiest with that rule. Bigger is not better than plants. And most plants, because the roots grow a little bit slower than the upper part of the plant, it's going to take a while for that root system to fill out that pot. Mm-hmm. So in the meantime, it's growing, especially if it's a tall plant and it's a bit top-heavy, it's going to shift in all that loose new soil. So it's best to just do 1 to 2 inch.
Right. 866-999-4626 for your comments or questions about your indoor plants. 866-999-4626, our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. And what about trimming back? I mean, obviously, you want to trim off any dead leaves, but are there plants that you would trim to keep a certain size in the houseplants, or do you just let them go?
Oh, no. People are so afraid to do a little pruning, and it's just really essential, especially for people that have overwintered geraniums or hibiscus inside. Going into the longer day length and going into the spring, it's a good time to do some, and you can do some severe plant pruning on, you know, really leggy plants. Also plants that, you know, haven't been trimmed. One of the ones that comes to mind is Schefflera or umbrella tree. Any plant that's kind of outgrown its boundaries and is no longer looking that well. Some plants are more difficult to know where to prune, but for most plants, you always want to prune just above where there's new growth or new leaves. You wouldn't, like, leave a stem sticking up.
Mm-hmm.
So no, spring, as we go into the growing season and plants are now picking up a little speed and growing, we do want to give some pruning. It's time to prune.
That's a good point about the geranium stuff, because they can get really leggy over the winter. And as you say, now if they're in a nice sunny window, you cut them way back, they'll get kind of bushy and you'll be perfect to put outside once the weather turns nice.
Yeah. Oh, yes. You can prune those back pretty hard. You can prune them back almost down right to the nubs.
Wow.
And they'll come back and fill out.
Yeah. Now, Marianne has sent us an email. She says, I have a cyclamen that has lost its leaves. How long does the bulb need to rest before starting again, and how do I care for it?
Okay, they do lose their leaves. It's kind of unusual this early in the season. I don't know how old her cyclamen is, but it sounds like it's asking for a rest period. Usually they start to produce new leaves. I've, in the past, put mine outside. Either in a pot or in the ground, and they put on a lot of new growth.
This is too early to put it outside, though, isn't it?
Oh, definitely.
Yeah. Wait till
we're talking about probably we're having an early start to the season, and it's been very mild, but don't be fooled. March can be very
cold. Oh, yeah.
I would definitely wait till nights no longer drop down below 50.
This rest period, when it's resting, are you not watering it? What are you doing to let it rest?
You can just leave it dry. You don't need to really. When it doesn't have leaves, it's really not taking up much.
Mm-hmm.
Resting means resting.
So just leave it alone.
You can just leave the soil. You can just maybe, like, if it's extremely dry, you want to give it a little bit of water, but you want to wait. Keep it on the dry side. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, there's a danger of that corm rotting.
And what about the the amaryllis that have already bloomed. Do we leave the leaves and just let them go for a while, put them outside, when do you put them in the basement to get dark?
That's right. You want to think of it now. You want to cut away the stalk where the bloom was.
Mm-hmm.
Cut that away. You leave leaves. Sometimes it doesn't start to leaf out until it has bloomed. And if you have leaves, you want to promote leaves because the leaves are the energy for the plant. They're the food for the plant. So you want to treat it like you would any house plant and nurture it that way. A lot of people just stick them outside. The time to force it back into its rest period would be the fall.
Mm-hmm.
That time, you know, you just kind of stop your watering. You can put it in the basement or a cellar, someplace where it's not going to freeze, but where it's going to be cool and dark and dry for at least 3 to 4 months.
Okay, 3 to 4 months, longer than I thought. All right, we have another email from Margaret. She says, how can I get an orchid to bloom again?
Oh, yes.
Oh, everybody has that question.
Okay, yes. You know, I've heard so many different stories with orchids. Some that have bloom continuously, and others that have refused to bloom for 3 to 4 years. We can't treat all orchids the same. I assume they're maybe talking about a Phalaenopsis, because
mm-hmm.
that's the most common orchid,
right,
and one of the ones that most people have in their homes.
It's tricky.
Have to remember that under conditions where they're grown, they get a perfect, perfect habitat. And a lot of it has to do with temperature, where the day temperature is warmer than the nighttime temperature. So a drop in temperature is night. It also has to do with the light source. It seems when I ask people that are having great success with their orchids reblooming, they have them in a bay window,
mm-hmm.
even better a kitchen bay window, where they're getting light from different angles. Not strong light, diffused light or light from the east or west, but not strong sunlight.
Hmm.
And a little bit of fertilizer. Some of the books will say every other time you water, add a little bit of plant food to the water. Other ones say don't fertilize while it's blooming, but I don't think it will hurt to give it a little bit of plant food to sustain it.
Hmm.
But sometimes it's just the individual orchid. Some are just stronger repeat bloomers than others.
You know, I bought a Phalaenopsis in December. It's a dark purple. It is still blooming. I cannot believe how long this thing has been blooming.
They're a wonderfully rewarding plant. They really are.
Yeah.
People sometimes are so thrilled when they do get to bloom again.
Yeah, I've been so surprised.
Yeah, yeah. I can't think of any other plant that blooms longer, except for maybe the crown of thorns.
Oh.
I have one that's been a bloom for about 12 years continuously.
Oh, you're kidding. 12 years? Wow, that's amazing. You definitely get your money's worth with one, don't you?
It has a common name, Forever Flower, and I guess it has that common name for a good reason, because it's a great plant. It's the only one I can suggest that stays constantly in bloom.
Well, I'm with Margaret. This is going to be my challenge to see if I can get this thing to bloom again next year. You're listening to WCAI. We're talking with Marcia Potash, lifelong gardener. She's been working in greenhouses and nurseries for more than 30 years. Last 20 of them have been with indoor and tropical plants. 866-999-4626 for your comments or questions. If you have some suggestions that we haven't touched on about our indoor plants, we'd love to hear it. Maybe you've got a favorite that you'd like to share. 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. So what are some of the most common mistakes that people make with indoor plants? Is it overwatering, underwatering, wrong light? What's the most common? All of
probably,
the above?
Probably definitely overwatering. That will kill a plant faster than anything else. I mean, there's all different kinds of ways of just a plant not thriving and not enough light or too much light, insect infestation. Mm-hmm. That's something else I would love to just mention. This time of year, after the winter, winter is very stressful on plants with the dry air. And a lot of plants, if they've been fertilized too much, and it also depends upon the variety of plant, but some are very susceptible to things like spider mites. Mm. Mealybug is another one. I found scale on my ficus rubber tree the other day, and I said, uh-oh, yes.
Oh, boy, yeah.
This is late winter, early spring. It's a good time to go over your plants and make sure you don't see any stickiness, which is a sign of scale, or mealybug. Mealybug is another one that's a big problem, and it looks like little patches of white cotton stuck to your plant. And this is one you really need to take care of, because it spreads very quickly, as does scale. But it's a good time to inspect your plants a little bit more closely.
I'm always wondering when that happens, where do they come from? You know, it's winter. There's nothing, you know.
Oh, my goodness. The eggs can be there. There has not been one commercial greenhouse that I've been in that it's not a problem. So it usually, if you only have one plant in your house, one that you have bought, and it gets insects, you're going to have to blame where it came from. Because, you know, they only exist on the house plants. They need a food source. So inadvertently, you've brought it in. So it's good to inspect your plants before you bring them home, especially if you have other plants, because you don't want to insect infestation outbreak, although they don't travel that quickly from one plant to the next. But, the eggs can be there. They can almost be invisible. It's really, really hard.
Yeah. It was a big tropical plant in a very big pot, and I had it indoors in the winter, and it had aphids. I dragged it outside, just outside the door, right next to my beautiful honeysuckle vine, and don't you know, of course, it spread right onto that vine. It was terrible. So you can actually, you know, when you bring them outside, you can pass them along to your outdoor plants as well.
Some you can and some you can't. Yeah. Mealybug, for instance, is a tropical insect. That's why you only find it mostly on indoor plants or in greenhouses. Mm-hmm. It was introduced in this country by the textile industry before they had synthetic dyes. And, of course, it escaped and now can be a nemesis.
Wow, that's interesting.
So that's how that insect got here. But I find lots of times just getting a plant that has been troubled with insects and getting it outside, not necessarily aphids, because they can survive very well outside.
Right.
But other plants like scale and mealybug, and sometimes beneficial insects will come along and help clean up
that
problem.
That's what I was hoping. I was hoping the birds would take care of it.
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So when we're talking about overwatering, how often, and I guess it depends on the plant, right? How often should you water? I have some house plants. I don't have a ton, but I water them all just once a week.
That's generally the rule. That's fine. Some can go as long as 2 weeks, some as long as 3 weeks. I find a lot of it has to do with how dry the air is and how leafy the plant is. I have one plant that I swear I'm watering three times a week, but it's because it's in a clay pot. Now, clay pots, the water evaporates through the pot, it's drawn through the clay. So plants in clay pots probably will require a little bit more pot watering. That's why they're used for cactus and succulents. They're great for plants that like to dry out between watering. But the general rule, some plants never want to dry out. Peace lily doesn't. But then on the other hand, it doesn't want to be soaking wet.
Right.
Especially if it's a well-established plant, it's easy to overwater peace lilies. A lot of people let them start, like, wilting a little bit. That will indicate that, I'm ready for a drink.
Mm-hmm.
Other plants will never wilt. They don't tell you when they need water, but the general rule is, like, if it's dry an inch down, you know, it's time to water.
And then we have plants like African violets, which are super easy, but they don't like their leaves to get wet.
No, they don't like to get their leaves wet, although tempered or warmer water is not going to hurt. It's good to take a soft paintbrush and brush off their leaves, seeing as how you don't want to dump water on them. That's one way of keeping the leaves clean. Also, this is a good time of year also to clean your plants, the leaves. Just wipe off dust that's accumulated. I heat with a wood stove, so it's a bit of a problem, but you don't want to interfere with plants' ability to photosynthesize by having a lot of dust on their leaves. African violets, they like to get to a little bit to the dry side. Those can quickly succumb to overwatering.
Yeah.
Some plants, mostly overwatering. What happens with overwatering is like drowning. The roots get saturated. They can't bring oxygen up into the plant, so the roots shut down and quickly start to die off. And it spells the end of your plant.
Yeah.
Now, whereas if they're a little bit on the dry side, they usually recover.
Yeah. Now, for a while there, we were having some trouble finding African violets, but have we got them back in stock in most places now?
Yes. Back in stock. Sometimes there's lapses, I think, in the industry where plants, you know, there's been like high demand for them, and they have to build up their stock again. There's also fewer African violets. Most of the African violets were grown in Canada, and a lot of the Canadian growers,
have switched their crop, so to speak, right?
Yes, they've switched their crops and they're no longer growing African violets and some of the others. So some of the plants have become hard to obtain.
Yeah, we should say they've...
Gloxinia, and another one I can think of is what people love is that Streptocarpus or Kay primrose.
Yeah, and they've switched their crops to marijuana because
they're
making more money.
Of course.
866-999-4626. That's 866-999-4626 for your comments or questions about your house plants. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. So what indoor plants are trending now?
Oh, gosh, the one that's really popular with the kids is the Monstera, the Philodendron Monstera, or some people call it a Swiss cheese plant. That has become very popular. Also, the fiddle leaf fig. I want to remind people, though, especially if they have pets, that both of those plants are poisonous. The other ones are the succulents, the echeveria. Of all succulents sold, the echeveria makes up for about 90% of the sales. So that's a really popular one. Also, air plants. Air plants are really coming into their own, and people are getting very creative with them. And they're just really a fun thing to collect where there's so many varieties.
Now, would the air plants do well? They like a little bit of moisture, right? So maybe put them in the bathroom? Is that a good spot for them?
Okay, they don't live on air alone. Good question. Bathroom is a great place, but any windowsill, they do need light. The three things the air plants require to stay healthy is light, moisture from time to time, and air movement or good air circulation. Those are their three requirements, and there's three ways you can take care of their moisture needs, and that is misting them, which you might want to do 3 or 4 times a week, running water over them at the tap or soaking them once a week.
Hmm. Now, you mentioned the succulents, and there are so many varieties now, and there's some really pretty, but I'm surprised that they're kind of on the pricey side, a lot of the succulents.
They certainly are.
I guess it's because they're popular, right? Supply and demand?
You know, that's a hard one to answer, but I have seen their prices go up, and it probably has something to do with the demand and what people are willing to pay for them.
Yeah.
Which just surprises me, because I've been working in a houseplant business for so long. I've seen the prices steadily go up, and that's probably happened, I would say, within the, like, really only by maybe the last 5 or 6 years. And that's because of the prices, everything has gone up. The price of growing them, the fuel, the transportation. One of the explanations I got from Canada, because all of a sudden their prices went up, was that the minimum wage went up. So all these factors factor into the end product.
Yeah. All right, so you mentioned a pet. So if you have cats and dogs, what are some of the plants that might be a good choice, and what do you want to stay away from?
Okay, good question, because that is one of the questions that people ask when they come into the greenhouse. First one is, what can I grow in the dark? And the second one is, what is not going to kill my cat or dog? And there are quite a few that are safe for cats and dogs. The ones people want to stay for, unfortunately, are some of the more popular ones, like the snake plant or mother-in-law tongue, azizi plant, all the philodendrons, all the ivies, all the dracaenas, peace lilies, Deffenbachia. Those are all the ones, and all the ficus. Those are the ones you really want to stay away from. But there are plenty that are safe. And some of the more popular ones, we mentioned African violets earlier. That's a safe one. Most ferns are safe, except for asparagus fern. Orchids, bromeliads, a ponytail palm. One of the succulents that's safe is the Hawartia, and also the Echeveria are very safe, as are the air plants, all the Tillandsias. Prayer plants, Hoyas, and most of the palms are safe as well, except for maybe what they call a sago palm, which isn't a true palm. Ferns, like a Boston fern, prayer plants, polka dot plants, peperomia. The peperomia is also a very, very popular one right now and is very easy to grow. Christmas cactus is safe.
Oh, you got a lot. Yeah,
there
of choices.
Are quite a few. I mean, there's some great lists. You know, if people are concerned about it, just look up the list on safe for cats and dogs, and you'd be surprised at how many really are, you know, safe to have in the home for your pets.
All right. You said the other question you get is, what can I grow in the dark? What is that all about?
Okay. Just grow in the dark. It's people that just really don't have really good light sources in their apartments or homes. They don't have a good bright window. But there's plenty of plants that will do quite well, much less light. And I'm learning this all the time. As long as I've worked with houseplants, you know, you assume certain things. And then something comes along and changes your mind. But there are quite a few. The ones that I usually direct people to are also easy to care for. One of them is that snake plant. That's very easy to grow in low-light areas. Chinese evergreens, Deffenbachia, Fittonia, peace lilies. Parlor palms is one of the best that I direct people to. Great. A lot of these plants will live under artificial light as well.
You know, there are some folks who really like, you know, the jade plants and the bonsai trees, and it's really, you know, a passion. They, you know, with the bonsai and the way they trim them, and are those two plants that are difficult or relatively easy? How are they to grow?
Well, bonsai is a term. It just means small tree in a small pot. And the one that people are attracted to, and often I try to steer them away from it because it doesn't really make a good house plant, is the Chinese juniper, which can be a bit of a challenge if you're trying to keep it indoors year-round. Mm-hmm. It's more of like a, you know, outdoors for spring, summer, and fall, and maybe just indoors for the coldest part of the year. But there are plenty of bonsai, the ficus, the sarissa, that can be kept as a houseplant. Some of the bonsai are very, very expensive, yeah. But there's a lot of what I call commercial-grade ones, which are, you know, readily available and not too pricey, but they do require a little bit more care because they're in a shallow pot. They tend to be root-bound. They need certain pruning. Some of them grow very quickly over the, especially during the growing season, during the summer months, so need continuous pruning. I find myself pruning, for instance, the little ficus or Bayonne fig very often during the growing season because it grows out so quickly.
Mm. And what about the jade plants?
The jade, that's an easy one. For some people keep it in too low light. It needs good bright light, not direct sun, and it needs to be turned a little bit from time to time so it grows evenly. A lot of people run into problems where the jade is never pruned and it grows out and it gets kind of a weeping look to it where it starts trailing, and it just means that it just really hasn't been in enough light. Or if it grows very thinly and the stems are kind of thin and straggly, it means that it's not in enough light.
Yeah. And you can actually break pieces off of that and start another one.
You certainly can, just with a leaf.
Yeah, that we're talking about some good projects for kids. If you have a jade plant, that would be a fun one to do, yeah.
I was going to mention that one, Mindy, about, like, starting, you know, plants besides a spider plant, you know, starting things. Another one, if there's a peperomia, the peperomias need to be pruned from time to time to keep it nice and dense and full, and those are very easy to root from a cutting.
You're listening to The Point. We're talking with Marcia Potash, lifelong gardener, who's been working in greenhouses and nurseries for more than 30 years, last 20 of which have been with indoor and tropical plants. If you have comments or questions about your plants, 866-999-4626. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. Jill writes, thank you, Mindy, and your guests for this lovely plant talk. I worked in my garden yesterday afternoon cutting dead branches off my hydrangeas, and it was very therapeutic.
I did too.
Yeah. I'm sharing my rosebush photos from a deck plant that I bought in honor of my dear mom who passed away last March. It was so beautiful all summer long and gave me so much joy. I intended on planting it in the ground when fall came, but was super busy and forgot. So I decided to bring it upstairs to my south-facing hallway, and it's been fun watching it grow. And it's a beautiful photo. Jill, thanks for sharing that with us. Probably do want to put that outside, though, right? In the spring when the weather warms up a little bit.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Definitely,
yeah. Yeah, but it's nice when we can bring a plant inside and have some fun with it. All right, Rose from Harwich writes, about 10 years ago, I started saving that nice green water left over from steaming vegetables, letting it cool, and then giving it to my house plants. I figure all that green is plant material that I can feed to my plants. Plants that get this water are orchids, jade, cyclamen, gardenias, and peace plant, and they are all pretty healthy. Have you ever heard of this? Might be making me feel better than the plants.
Okay, that sounds like my mother. My mother drank the water from the vegetables, and she swore that, okay, all the nutrients that are seeped out of the vegetables into the water have to be good for you. I imagine so. I don't see why that would hurt. What I always tell people, I said, well, whatever you're doing, if it seems like it's really successful and it's working, there's no reason not to continue.
Right. Okay. Ro, thanks for that. Clemencia's calling from Falmouth. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. Go ahead. What's your question or your comment?
My question is it safe to have plants in your bedroom?
Oh, yes. Plants in your bedroom. Go ahead, Marcia. This is a big topic for lots of people. They want plants in the bedroom. Yes.
Oh, yes. You can go Google plants for the bedroom, and it will come up. The ones that come to mind are the sansevieria and some of the succulents, the orchid, and it's because they release oxygen at night. Where most plants at nighttime when the sun goes down, they take in oxygen and release carbon dioxide. Certain plants take in carbon dioxide and release oxygen. So these are the ones they consider good for a bedroom. Also, things like lavender, if you have enough sun for it, or anything that has scent to it, especially lavender because it has a soothing effect. Mm. But there are plenty of plants, and they are perfectly safe for the bedroom. Mm. I probably have about 35 plants in my bedroom, and and I'm pretty healthy.
That's funny. Thanks for the compliments. And Charlene is calling from Marion. Hi, Charlene.
Hi. You talked about mealybugs, mm-hmm. And I have a jade plant that seems to be quite infested with that white powdery substance, mm-hmm. which I'm assuming is mealybug. But you didn't mention the treatment. I wonder what I can do about it.
Okay. This is probably one of the topics I talk the most about, mm-hmm. is taking care of mealybugs on plants. And mealybug is one of the insects that really loves jades in all succulents. Not so much cactus, but certainly all the succulents. It can be a really big problem, and it's best to catch it early on. You can tell if it's a mealybug if you place your finger on it and pull your finger away, and there's like little things that stick to your finger, and underneath it's kind of an orangey look. That's why it was used as a dye, because it produces an orange color. One of the first things you can do is just get a cotton ball or a paper towel or anything, soak it with rubbing alcohol, and swipe away all those patches you see. If it's really severely infested, and it can be bad on some things, it's best just to get rid of the plant. But if it's something that has sentimental meaning and you want to spend the time on it, you can also put alcohol, just straight rubbing alcohol, in a spray bottle or misting bottle and spray directly on the mealybug. After you've done that, what that does is it dissolves the waxy coating, which is what you're seeing. You're seeing that white, well, it's a waxy coating, and it's protecting their egg cases. And that's really what you want to get rid of. You want to get rid of the adults, but you really want to get rid of their egg cases. Afterwards, I usually treat with something like all-season oil. Stay away from insecticidal soap and some of the others because they can pit a jade. But the all-season oil, which is a refined horticultural oil, suffocates it. And you really want to cover it completely. Usually with all these insecticides, you have to go back within 7 to 10 days and repeat. Or just keep your eye on it and make sure you don't see it coming back. I know I had a jade once that was pretty badly infested with mealybug, and I managed to get rid of it.
Yeah. Good luck, Charlene. Hope that works for you. Yeah. Thanks for the call. 866-999-4626 is our number. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. Now, we talked about houseplants being really popular with younger people. Do you see younger people who are starting with houseplants begin to expand to outdoor gardens, you know, maybe growing vegetables or flowers?
Oh, yes, definitely, especially if they have their own yards. Also, too, container gardening. There's just a general interest in just growing things, I believe. And I know a few years back, vegetable gardening really started trending, and it still is. And we often have quite a few newcomers who've never grown anything outside as far as, you know, even a petunia, mm-hmm. Which are really interested in learning and which ones they're going to get the most satisfaction from. So, yes, I would definitely say they are interested in.
And that's something you can start with the kids, too, is starting some of the vegetable stuff inside now, right, with some the starter seeds. Is it too early to start that, or is it okay to start?
No, I think we're almost into April, and it's time to start those things like tomatoes and peppers, things that take, you know, some time, and you want to have them a pretty good size before they go into the garden. There's a lot of other things that like to be direct sown as well in usually end of March, early April, you can maybe sow peas and radishes and lettuce and all those really cool weather varieties. Mm-hmm. I know at the Garden Center we've had people now asking for the last 2 weeks for the cool weather vegetables because they're ready to get going with their garden.
Sure.
Things like broccoli and cabbage and all those things that will stand, you know, the cooler temperature and grow best, you know, during cooler weather. But for inside projects, the tropical plants.
Yeah, and I'll say, and
it's too early to start squash. I don't think I'd start any squash because what happens is it grows very quick.
And then it gets leggy.
It'll just get out of hand. Yeah. And, you know, by the time it's safe to plant it, which I always say with any tropical vegetable, is to wait until night's no longer dipped down below 50.
Mm-hmm. And it's amazing what the kids who don't like vegetables, the vegetables that they'll actually eat if they grow it.
Oh, definitely.
Good way to get them to do that. And herbs, we should think about, I mean, you can grow herbs indoors too, right?
You can grow herbs. You do need some really good sunshine for herbs, and that's true of most olives, except for mint. Mint will take a little bit of lower light. But yes, a lot of people just enjoy having some fresh rosemary or basil to snip.
Yeah.
Parsley gets a little bit yellow and leggy, but if you don't have enough sun, they are going to get leggy and stretch out, especially things like chives.
Now, what species have you seen go out of favor that may have been all the rage, say, 15, 20 years ago? Is it trendy, like fashion, you know, like the what's in style changes?
It does a little bit, although we still have people from, you know, from the 60s and 70s during the hippie days when they became popular, things like piggyback plant, and which you can't find. And I feel like now these things are wanting to make a comeback, but they're getting scarcer to find some of these old-fashioned plants. But most of them, like philodendrons and pothos and ivies, they're all as popular as they've ever been. And I don't see too much that's really, really gone out of style. People are buying fewer cactus now. Succulents have kind of taken over, where years ago, you know, it was just the cactus were available, and people really weren't aware of succulents.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, yes, trends come and go, I would definitely say. Aspidistra, which is a cast iron plant, that's another one that is not popular anymore just because it's just such a dull kind of non-interesting plant.
I'm trying to think of what is the plant that's like, it's purple, it's like looks like velvet, like purple leaves. What is that called?
Oh, that's purple passion.
Purple passion, yes.
I like that. The only way I can get it is like in these little 2-inch pots. So you'd have to wait for it to grow quite a bit. The other thing that's kind of hard about that is it's very attractive to aphids.
Oh.
It blooms. The bloom is not very fragrant at all. But that is one that generally the older folks will ask about. It's those plants that they remember that they would like to find again and grow again.
Yeah.
Some of those are just really kind of scarce out there.
All right, Peter from Yarmouth says he wants to know about his Christmas cactus. Mine only had one bloom, and it was in February. Should I put it out in the summer?
Okay, if you put it out during the summer, which is what I do with mine, be forewarned, mine all bloom at Halloween. I call them my Halloween cactus. But I have a couple right now that are blooming again, not as prolifically as they did, you know, back during Halloween in October, but sometimes they will repeat again if they bloom early. One of the reasons for putting it outside, besides it, you know, really most plants do enjoy, there's no true house plant, they enjoy the outside environment, the airflow, you know, the light, the cooler temperatures at night. All those advantages, and they really flourish. It's a great way if a plant is struggling just to give it a new lease on life. But what Christmas cactus are short day length, and they set their buds during the shorter day. So if it's outside and it's getting to be like towards the end of October, they're going to get some cooler nights, and the days are going to be a bit shorter. And that's what triggers your bloom.
Interesting. I there's only one houseplant that I don't put out in the summer, and that's because it's too big to move. Anything that I can move, I put them all outside. And the things that, you know, you find that if you leave them in the house don't always rebloom, they seem to definitely rebloom when you put them outside.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yep. There's something about outside they like.
Yes.
Yeah. All right. So if you have a plant that's growing too big for a pot, but you don't have the space to give it a bigger pot, can you divide it without worrying that you're going to kill it?
Okay. That's a little difficult. It depends upon the plant. Sometimes they can just be, they can be trimmed back, cut back, just to keep it a more manageable size.
Mm-hmm.
Also, too, plants that haven't been repotted in a long time, and it's just too much mm-hmm. to handle repotting it or moving it into a bigger pot, can just be top dressed. Worm castings, they now sell bagged worm castings. Those are great. Way of giving a plant that you're not going to repot some good, you know, nutrition and just a little bit of soil on top, maybe to cover those roots that are exposed.
Yeah. And so what are some of your favorite indoor plants? So you mentioned you have 30-something in your bedroom. I can't imagine how many you have total, but what are some of your favorites?
Oh, some of my favorites. That's hard to say. I don't really have favorites. There's plants that, though, I've hung on to for a long time. I have a Hoya, which is definitely indestructible. Usually the plants that are my favorites are the ones that just are very accommodating mm-hmm. and have become accustomed to the care that I give it and survive and do well. So I would say a Hoya for mm-hmm. one thing. I have also a few plants that I have grown from plants that are usually grown outside. One is a Duranta. It's called Goldcrest, and it has beautiful, beautiful golden leaves, golden yellow, bright yellow with green streaks in them. And it's a very common plant down in Florida and other tropical places. And it makes a great house plant. Some mm-hmm. of those can adapt to, you know, situations indoors. I would have to say my Christmas cactus. I'm not much of an African violet person. Either you're an African violet person or you're not.
Right.
And I'm definitely not.
You're not, yeah.
I'm also not a great orchid person, too, and it's just because I don't have the right habitat for it.
Them, yeah. We have about a minute left, and I guess asking your favorite plants is like asking your favorite child, right?
Right.
Exactly.
No favorite.
So in our last minute.
They're all worth it.
Yeah. So in our last minute that we have, somebody who's hearing this and going, you know what, I think I want to try that. What's maybe a couple of suggestions for a plant to try to start to see if, you know, you have that green thumb. Everybody can have the green thumb. So what's something that will give them some success?
Okay. Probably successful plants for the first time houseplant owner.
Mm-hmm.
Probably I would have to say pothos and also peace plant and polypam. And if you want to get a little bit more adventurous, the Rex begonias are wonderful. Mm. And they have a lot of color in the leaf. So I think those probably are the top ones. Also, jade plant is another one that would be great for beginners.
Mm-hmm.
And all of the sansevierias. The sansevierias are wonderful fun. And mm-hmm. there's so many very interesting varieties now, even one called shark's fin.
All right. Marcia Potash, thanks so much for helping us with our houseplants this morning. And it's April is almost upon us. We'll have Roberta Clark back next month to start talking about our outdoor gardening. Marcia, thanks for being with us.
Oh, thank you for having me.
I'm Mindy Todd. Thank you for listening.
The Point is produced by Amy Vince. The executive producer is Mindy Todd. Production assistance from Jenny Junker and Dan Tridle. Theme music by Benjamin Verdery and William Coulter.